everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see below the surface.
Yeah, and plenty of reality today.
Oh, man.
This is episode number 72, and we're going to talk about Steven Spielberg's movie called Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so wonderful movie, fairly recent. I thought it was realistic right up until he joined the Beatles. I don't think that was accurate.
Yeah, shaving the beard off was a bad move, and I really prefer the beard.
Heck yeah. Oh, shoot.
Was this movie accused of being unhistorical?
I don't think it was. You know, I poked around a little bit, not as much as I wanted to, you know, which is usually the case. And but I found a few articles that said, you know, what this got right and what this got wrong. And, you know, that's all just dependent on the point of view of whoever was writing it. It seemed to, you know, there were some conservative, specifically conservative things and some specifically liberal things, you know, which is how our country seems to be split. And they all had their own troubles with the whole thing, you know. So,
And that's something that, right away, I'm starting off the movie, but that's something that I like about reading history, especially the history of our country, because everybody goes around saying things like, well, they've never had as acrimonious a political battle as this, or the press has never been so terrible. And you look back at all through our history, especially since that's what I'm most familiar with, and it's been worse.
Yeah, and so that is, I think, my biggest takeaway from this movie when I first saw it was that, you know, we have this man, you know, you could call him Saint Lincoln. You know, if the United States was a church, then he's Saint Lincoln. You know, he's one, him and George Washington are probably our most revered characters in the history of our country, right? And then what this movie shows him doing, he's got good motives, but his means are questionable, and that you see him as a real person doing what he has to do in order to get things done. As we watch the turmoil in our country here in 2013, you know, with all the stuff in Congress and everything like that that's happened in this year. It was interesting and eye-opening, and it made me want to read Doris Goodwin Kearns, isn't that her name? She wrote a book called A Team of Rivals, which was the main source of information for the movie. It was called A Team of Rivals, which is, gosh, and it had a subtitle too, which kind of explained what the book was, but I don't have it. Oh, there it is. The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, Team and I think Rivals, that...
Doris Kearns Goodwin, sorry. Doris
Kearns. I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that the book also, this is just a small portion because Spielberg wanted to make the book into a movie and then looked at it and said, I would have to have, you know, 20 hours. So he picked something that seemed close to his heart or that he thought he could do well. I'm not sure about that. That's what I think I heard at the time. And you look back, I was looking at this book I have, a history book, America, The Last Best Hope, which sounds really, I don't know, superior sounding, except that The Last Best Hope was taken from one of Lincoln's speeches. And when you find that out, you suddenly think, yeah, well, who else fights a war like this? To try to do the right thing, really. And it talks about before he was elected, what the wit he had, the things he would say, how he would outmaneuver people in speeches and all that kind of thing. And you realize this guy had a razor sharp mind as well as a razor sharp wit. And he understood exactly how the system worked. He had to get to where he was. But we don't think about that because enough time has gone by and he is much revered. And I would say the thing I love about him and also pretty much George Washington, rightfully so. They seem to have been genuinely good people with the right motives and trying as hard as they could.
Yeah, and that's the thing right there. We, you know, another thing from watching this movie And just being having a general interest in the presidency, which has kind of been building in me over the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years for some reason. Very interested in Bush, very interested in Obama. Started to read some history on presidents specifically. We require a heck of a lot out of that person. You know, I mean, there's the number of roles. There's like 5 roles that presidents have that I think in other countries are split up into various people. You know, like I think of England specifically, you know, it's like the Queen has a certain role that still exists. That's, you know, symbolic, kind of the heart of the country type of a thing. And then you've got, you know, the Prime Minister who is doing the dirty work, right? Well, and in our president, that's one person. You know, so right. you've got the person who has to do the dirty work and try to be the heart of the country. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always work. And it's just interesting to see Abraham Lincoln at work, you know, and I feel that after watching this movie, I feel that I know Lincoln in a different way than I did before, which is still not in any kind of a deep way. Right. But it's interested enough that I would like to delve even deeper.
Yeah, that book might be interesting to read. I hadn't thought about... Oh, thank you. I needed something else on my list. Well, so does everybody, I guess, knows what the movie's about? Do you want to give like a...
Yeah, right before synopsis. We jump into that, I just thought I'd look at... this movie got a whole bunch of accolades. Daniel Day-Lewis won Best Actor Academy Award.
He was astounding.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And it was nominated, it looks like, you know, for about 12 awards. And it won the Best Actor and Best Production Design. And then, there's a whole list of awards. The Golden Globe Awards, Daniel Day-Lewis won Best Actor there as well. And then the Screen Actors Guild, both Daniel Day-Lewis and Tommy Lee Jones won.
Well, and... So. I would just like to say my nomination that it should have won was the bravery in having Sally Fields as Mary Todd Lincoln not have makeup on or look like she had makeup on. And when she was wearing those dresses and you're like, oh older ladies should always have a shawl around their neck, ma'am. You know, but that was actually how she was. And you just go, oh, nice. Let it be the way it probably was at the time, because nice ladies didn't wear makeup and she would have been wearing those evening gowns. And she was kind of crazy.
She was an interesting character.
And opinionated and everything else. And I loved the way, and just to jump ahead a bit, but the way that she portrayed Mary Todd Lincoln from, again, I'm just leaning on this one resource, this first volume of this history, but she was this odd combination of, you know, very volatile, and she was kind of sent over the edge by one of their sons' death, and would do things like bring spiritualists into the White House to try to contact her son, made the president attend one of the sessions, and but at the same time, she was fiercely defend him and say things that would get her into trouble and him into trouble. You know, she was that awkward person who was always like, oh, Mary, I have enough to deal with. Stop
she
it.
She was fascinating. So this guy, what was his name? Thaddeus Stevens, right? The House of Representatives. He's played by Tommy Lee Jones. I remember an exchange between Mary Todd Lincoln and him where he comes to the White House and she's like, hey, welcome to the White House. You know, are you going to look at my finances again? Which is just funny. You know, this is like 1864 or 5. And I'm thinking, that's not new, you know,
because she had been trying to spruce things up the way that she thought it should be for an important place. Yeah. And everyone's like, lady, we got the Civil War, or, you know, we have all this stuff going on. What? And it made me think of the huge fuss that was raised when Nancy Reagan came in and like started doing things like replacing all the presidential china. And everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? Stop it. That's a lot of money. You know, and she meant nothing but the best, but everybody was like, ah. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Yeah.
And Tommy Lee Jones was wonderful. I remember reading an interview. It must have been I was reading this book about the time all that stuff was going on. And he had asked maybe Spielberg or one of the writers, and he said, did they really say this stuff back then? Because he's got these lines talking about, you know, oh, you rattlesnakes, and, you know, he's being rough and all that. And they're like, oh, much worse. Here's some of the actual verbiage. And he's like, holy moly, okay.
Not right, you know. Yeah, I always felt that, well, I mean, to say always felt. I mean, one of the common things is, have you ever watched the Parliament in England? Especially like the Prime Minister's questions. Yeah.
Yeah,
they put the House or the Prime Minister questions on C-SPAN now and then, and you watch that, and my mouth just drops open.
I remember the first time I saw that, and I was like, what are they? They're raspberries, catcalls.
Oh, just amazing. And, you know, so if this is an accurate portrayal of what Congress was like, or what the House of Representatives specifically was like, then it's funny because we've evolved since then. But, you know, I always thought that we'd be moving towards kind of the English system. You know, it would get more and more like that as time went on. You know, because, you know, they've been at it for so long that, you know, this is just kind of what works for them. Mm-hmm. And you'd think, well, you know, maybe there's a reason for that. And eventually we'll get to that, too. But it's like we've changed.
No,
it's more civil.
No.
It's interesting.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like they have these two layers. It's the super proper stuff, which is what the Americans think of. It's the, you know, because I guess the books and movies and things that are shown as an example are, you know, the very proper behavior. But then you've got the common man, and I don't want to sound bad, but, you know, let's face it, we've all got these levels of the way we behave.
Yeah, sure.
You have the super proper people in our society too, and the people who are not that way. Oh, which, okay, completely off topic again, except it's political. Amazon Prime now has this series that's just started called Alpha House, which is written by Gary Trudeau.
Oh, wow. Doonesbury guy?
Right. And he's super democratic, liberal kind of, although I always read Doonesbury and I was always a more conservative bent, but he was so funny. And
I liked Doonesbury too.
Well, we watched, at the time that Amazon was doing this, they were floating a lot of pilots and asking people to vote on them. So you had stuff from very polished people, because this has John Goodman and some other well-known actors in it who I can't think of the name of right now. And then you had, you know, stuff that was much more amateurish, but I'd look at it and go, ooh, that looks like it has potential. And so people voted, and then they went ahead and produced a few of them as actual series. And so Alpha House is looking at Republicans, because they're like, if we go with the Democrats, we're going to turn off a whole big section of the potential population. And they're trying to show people who are trying to bridge that middle gap. You know, so, and the pilot was really good. And so talking about the political situation today, and they're also kind of struggling with that thing of, here's how people really act, but here's how we should act. You know, so it was kind of interesting, because it's these four guys who are rooming together, which is evidently a common thing.
Interesting.
And because they're senators and they rent a house or buy a house and then they all just live there.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, way off topic of the movie.
Yeah, no, it's good. So the movie itself is basically the last few months of Abraham Lincoln's life, I would say. Sometime in 1864 through his assassination in
April of 65,
right. That's right. I was just looking
at it. I feel smart, except I just looked it up.
No, I've got, there we go. I had a few tabs open here and I've got a timeline. But yeah, let's see. Yeah, April 15th, 1865 is when he passed away. That's not when he was shot. That's when he passed away. It took about a week,
tax
I guess.
Tax day.
Yeah. And my birthday.
Oh.
That's not a very good day. It's tax day. Lincoln died that day, and the Titanic also sank on April 15th.
Oh, well, thank goodness you were born so we have something to lift our spirits.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right.
To celebrate it. No, I stand by that.
That's too funny. True. Oh, thank you. Wow, that's very nice. Right. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, the book opens with really the only battle that we see, just the only battle that we see. The Civil War is raging, but we don't see it in this movie. Everything is from Washington. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how they put the Gettysburg Address in there. I thought that was really powerful.
Yeah.
So it's very close to the beginning. We don't see Lincoln give the Gettysburg Address, but he had recently given it. And a couple of soldiers came up to him and basically recited it to him. I thought that was pretty powerful. And he was a mm-hmm. little awkward and embarrassed. And thank you mm-hmm. very much. Thank you very much. You know. But again, Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, the first moment that you see him, he's I don't know what do you call it, presence or whatever, but
I think so.
I mean, that was remarkable. Really something else when you saw Lincoln. It's like, you can't look at anything else. You look at Lincoln and he's bigger than life in this movie. And at the same time, he's a person. And, so what I would say that the main focus of this is the passage of the 13th Amendment in the House of Representatives.
Right.
So Lincoln, we looked this up. He did the Emancipation Proclamation, which is basically an executive order, freeing slaves. And I'm looking at that. I can't find it on my thing. Was that 1862? Is that right?
Oh, I thought it was 63.
Okay, it sure maybe could
it
was, be.
It might have been 62 because that was what he could do.
Right, right.
And it was hugely controversial at the time.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, the situation, you know, we read The Killer Angels, which addressed a lot right. of this stuff. You know, so right. When we left the Civil War, the Battle of Gettysburg had just been completed.
Yeah.
So, the Emancipation Proclamation, 1863. I'm sorry, I was looking that up at the same time.
Yeah.
So it was an executive order issued by President Abraham Lincoln as a war measure. In the little bit of poking around that I've done, I have found some things that were saying, well, he freed the slaves basically to try to win the war. He was undermining the economic viability of the South.
Right.
But I don't quite understand that because he can declare all he wants. If they've seceded, they're not going to listen to him, so their economy is going to be just fine. So I don't quite understand.
I had a better grip on that. Now I've lost it again.
Okay. So he, it's clearly good, you know, what he did, you know, so he does right. the Emancipation Proclamation. And then at this time, he's concerned that his executive order will be, overturned after the war is over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really interesting discussion near the beginning of the movie that really tied into, I think that I saw a moment of clarity about presidents. He was saying that he was doing this and he thought that he had the power to do it, but he wasn't positive. And so what was going to happen is it was going to be challenged in court probably when they had the opportunity to do it after the war. And I've heard, you know, Bush and President Obama say similar things and do similar things. It's interesting that, you know, each president that we get is interpreting what their powers are and acting without, sometimes without precedent, but they feel that it's justified because in the Constitution it may say this, you know, they've got their own, you know, nowadays they have a people, you know, and there were people for Lincoln too.
Right.
He wasn't alone. He wasn't in a vacuum saying, yeah, I think I could do this. There were people around him that were saying yes or no, that you don't have that or you do have that, you know, so he was being argued with and then he would make his action, right?
Right. Well, and I think for me what that showed also when he was saying, well, you could argue it like this or that, to me that was the lawyer coming out.
Yeah, sure enough.
That was his background going, well, looked at like this, looked at like that. And I did kind of find something about just looking through this really quickly about the Emancipation Proclamation in terms of if there was a huge movement, evidently, that what should be done is buy some land or get some land in South America and recolonize it with Black Americans to give them a fresh start. And this is something that Lincoln was kind of in favor of. He saw it as this is a way to be super fair. And Frederick Douglass, who, oh my gosh, again, you think that today you have leaders like that who are just the firebrands and, you know, like say Malcolm X or somebody is like, would you just stop it? No, he was just that way too, because he'd been a slave and he'd seen all this stuff. But he was pointing out, no, we are Americans. You can't cast us out and act like then you're treating us worse. Mm-hmm. And he convinced Lincoln of that. So the Emancipation Proclamation, in a sense, what it said was, these people are equal to us. They are Americans. And when that was signed, it meant they weren't going to go anywhere else. You had to settle this now. They were staying here. Mm-hmm. So that kind of settled that question of colonization. And it also was used because it says he issued his preliminary Emancipation Proclamation after a huge battle. Oh, and I can never say this, Antietam. Antietam. Mm-hmm. And it says, thank you. Mm-hmm. It says, unless the states rejoined the Union by 1st January 1863, all their slaves would be freed. And the North wasn't like super happy about this either, because they were afraid it was going to make it even worse. They were also, the abolitionists said, wait, you can't, because there was also this quarrel about what do you do with all the slaves after the war is won, hopefully.
Yeah, and there was how do you integrate them
into society in a way that they will be successful? You can't set everybody free and go, here you go, you're on your own. And so there was this idea of you gradually do it, you suddenly do it. And so what Lincoln was doing is going, no, they're free. Mm-hmm. Period. I'm settling this question now. So that was kind of necessary to go, here is their status as actual American citizens. Now we have to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there were a couple of moments in the movie where it was clear that, you know, it was laughable to a lot of people that they would be citizens. You know, there was a difference between being free and actually like voting and things like that. I mean, clearly that's how that worked out, but yeah, that's a tough situation. You know, it's but you know, just
anyway, I'm sorry.
It's in the movie. You know, there was, you know, when debating in Congress and having someone stand up and, you know, and say that kind of stuff. And it's interesting too, that, you know, Lincoln is Republican. And, mm-hmm. you know, although it didn't mean quite the same thing back then, you know, they evolved both times, but it's interesting that the Democrats. I just love Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
I've loved him since The Fugitive. Anyway.
Yeah, me too.
So the Democrats were the ones arguing against this freeing of the slaves, and the Republicans were the ones arguing for.
Right.
And so Thaddeus Stevens was a Republican, I guess the most powerful Republican in the House of Representatives.
And he was a radical Republican, mm-hmm. and that was a thing. I mean, as far as I could tell, and my husband's also read some books about the Civil War on different fronts, this all was right. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, they may have, they probably shoved a bunch of stuff together to make the story work.
Yeah,
for a movie,
yeah.
But, you know, he was a guy, and it was a thing.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so the bulk of the movie is Lincoln politically maneuvering, doing what he has to do to try to get this amendment passed in the House of Representatives, because it had already been passed in the Senate, mm-hmm. freeing the slaves officially. So once that's done, he felt that it couldn't be overturned. So he's doing everything that he can to try and get some Democrats to vote yes, or abstain or whatever. And so that's the bulk of the movie right there.
Right. And he feels like he has to do that before the war is done, because otherwise the states that, you know, the South, when they lose, they're going to start maneuvering again because they're still states again, and they're going to block the vote. And then that's going to leave the whole question still open, and the war will have been fought for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Essentially.
And the tightrope he walked. Yeah. There was you know, this team of rivals thing is really an interesting concept. So, you know, I don't know all the ins and outs. So, like, his Secretary of State, Seward.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's one time where he's talking to him about some envoys from the South that are coming up to discuss peace. And he says, surely you wouldn't do that without telling me that you did that. And, you know, Lincoln, you know, and it was startling as well how angry the Secretary of State was that that would even be happening. You know, peace,
right.
Not an option, you know, so.
Well, and Seward evidently was actually, he was one of the few people in the cabinet who the president actually got along with really well.
Okay, because it seemed that way in the movie as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like he was a trusted person, and he was alone with the president often.
They say there was a cartoon that, because people were terrible about him. I mean, again, you think people are bad about making fun of people and stuff. Oh, and they were awful about Lincoln. Because that was the style of the time. You could do that kind of thing. And, like, so one cartoon after Lincoln was really known for that thing of, well, this makes me think of a little story.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have cartoons of him standing on a battlefield with bodies all around him with, you know, a cigar going, this makes me think of a little story. And they said that, excuse me, except for the cigar-chomping Seward, with whom Lincoln came to enjoy funny stories and a genuine camaraderie, Lincoln's cabinet consisted mostly of solemn asses. He used their talents. There's not much indication he enjoyed their company, or they his, and that is so vividly portrayed in this.
Oh, how cool. Yeah, it really is. Yeah, that's fascinating that he would do that, too. It's, It was a good idea, too. You know, what do they say? Keep your enemies somewhere where you can see them, you know?
Keep your friends close and your enemies closer?
Yeah. You know, President Obama, when he put Hillary Clinton in as Secretary of State, I remember, you know, so many people said, yeah, that's like Lincoln. You know, Lincoln would have done that. And so, interesting.
Well, the thing I liked about this movie, one thing is that it really did a good job of helping lay out the complicated series of deals, political deals that had to be made in order to try to get the votes. And then when it would fall apart, you pretty well understood what had to happen next. I mean, they did a good job of leading you through it while keeping it dramatically interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I thought they did a really good job of showing these little moments where you could really relate to the president as a person. So he didn't just turn into a political maneuverer. You know, for instance, when he's talking to his wife and he's going, you know, if you wouldn't wallow in your grief, this would be better for everybody. I am doing the best I can here. But and you think I don't feel bad? And she just can't get it because that's not her personality.
Yeah.
And it's not that
there was one line that he said that really stuck in my mind about, you know, we all have to bear what we must, but you can make this unbearable or you can make it tolerable.
Yeah. And that just wasn't her way. She seemed more dramatic. But or the moments of him with his, excuse me, his youngest son, who was always dressed up in his little army uniform and playing with his soldiers in the office and stuff. And the moments with the oldest son, who wanted to join the army. He felt like he was being protected unfairly. He wanted to do something. I mean, all these little moments when you got to see more personal interaction that kind of helped add some layers.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Sure. And, you know, we haven't mentioned Robert Lincoln, which is a kind of a subplot, I guess you'd say.
Right. Right.
So he's got a son who wants to join, basically is rejecting all of the benefits of being Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to join the army. He feels that he must, and Lincoln doesn't want him to do it. And Mary Todd Lincoln, of course, has a come apart about it. So that was interesting. I don't think it was developed a heck of a lot. It wasn't to me a large focus of the movie. It was just kind of a side interest, like a almost something that was just in there, you know, it didn't seem to have a huge impact on me.
And I loved the thing where it was when I was watching this that I suddenly went, this time period was really on the cusp of changing because of technology. You know, it was on that knife's edge of the difference between one way of getting information and the other.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he was constantly haunting the telegraph office, And he'd be listening to, you know, are the reports in yet? And he would be hanging out in the middle of the night with whoever was on duty there, which evidently was actually how he did it, too. You know, that was the soonest way you could get information. And then when the vote's going through at the end and you can see Grant, isn't that who? No, was it Grant that his son was assigned to? So that kind of provides you with a link also, because his son is like, did dad do it, essentially? You don't get him saying that, but you could see it. So they're kind of listening to see, is the vote going to go through?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, that was neat. You know, he'd go down there. You're talking about, you know, him telling stories. I love the scene where that guy just, I can't stand another story. And he runs out. And as soon as he goes out, Lincoln just keeps going.
Yeah.
Just wait till you hear this. This is good stuff. Yeah, I love that.
Exactly. And they were wonderful stories.
They were, yeah. It was funny.
Yeah.
It was funny. But yeah, the telegraph office was really neat. And then, you know, he's in there late at night and seemed to do a lot of his thinking there, at least in the movie. And him working through his thoughts while talking and telling story to a single guy in that telegraph office, that was a very powerful scene, too.
Change what it said. Yeah, Read that to me again.
He changed the last line and said, don't come here. Yeah.
Right.
Yep. It was really well done.
Well, yeah, because he was obviously determined to do the right thing and be transparent and honest and open. But, you know, on the other hand, what do you need to do to make the bigger question happen? And it's kind of interesting because I've been rereading The Lord of the Rings, as I've mentioned, everywhere. And one of the things that becomes really clear is what we are always faced with is trying to discern the right choice. Good and evil, or good and bad, however you want to say it, are not always obvious. You know, do you put the ends above the means, or do the means matter? And that's kind of, he always wanted to use the right means, but sometimes the ends required things that weren't maybe the most up and up.
Yeah.
Because and everybody else was working so hard for something that was so different.
Sure, sure. And that's an extremely good point, because if he had not used the means that he had at his disposal, would anything have changed right then? And the answer is probably not. Almost surely not.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a huge gray area, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and people, I think some people didn't like this movie because it did show him being a politician, and he wasn't a politician. The thing is, he was the most honorable, best kind of politician you can imagine, actually, it seems to me, but he had the system.
Yeah.
He had to work within this system. So within this system, how does he accomplish the most honorable, best thing?
Yeah.
In that sense. And so it was really interesting to watch him threading his way through all this and through all these different, very different points of view that were all so adamant, where he was actually asking them all to meet in the middle for the good of everybody.
Right, right.
And nobody wanted to do that. Nobody wanted to give up their own personal point to help accommodate somebody else because they felt like it was all or nothing. And by getting all or nothing, they couldn't get anything. And so it's kind of interesting because you don't like to think of a compromise when it's high moral value. But, you know, every day, don't we have to, well, maybe hopefully not every day, but in our lives, we have to do that, too. And that's that gray choice of I'm trying to do the right thing. I hope it will turn out well. And that's why I think we often have to give other people the benefit of the doubt. We have to not assume that this bad result was deliberate or that they planned this horrible thing, you know, that they were way back here in this decision-making process trying to do the right thing as they saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
If more of us thought like that, I think we would have a less acrimonious political situation now.
I think we probably would too, yeah. I think that the lowest moment for Lincoln in this movie was when he went and visited the three guys that they had hired to try and pay everybody off. You know, so James Spader, who plays W.N. Bilbo. Yeah, I mean, I was as shocked as those guys were when Lincoln walked in that room.
Right, me too.
You know, because they were like, holy cow. I forget exactly what the line was where when he walked in there. But and he walked, and just said, hey, this needs to get done. That was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that really happened. I'm you know, how would they even know? I don't know. How would anybody know?
Guess we have to read that book.
Yeah, yeah.
And then see if we trust it.
Right, right.
Because that's the problem with history, isn't it? You read a history book, and I don't know what point it is in our adult lives when we suddenly go, wait a minute. This author has this very specific agenda or point of view, let's say, to be charitable.
Right, right.
And everything's being shown from this point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And so the best histories don't do that. You'll find it with history podcasts as well,
mm-hmm.
where you either have to listen and go, well, I like so much about it, but I just have to keep in mind, here's this author's personal flaw that I have to discount or, you know, or have to account for, or to find somebody who you feel is pretty fair is difficult, or who admits up front, I'm interested in this. Here's what I'm writing about.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Oliver Stone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you know, talk about someone who has an agenda. Good remember point. JFK.
Yeah.
But this movie, you know, Steven Spielberg, I thought was excellent. You know, I couldn't discern anything specific in this that I was thinking he was even trying to do.
Other than
maybe showing that, like you said at the beginning, you know, the country's always been like this. This is the way things have worked.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a good message for us to know today, you know, who, you know, we keep thinking that we're in uncharted territory. And though we are in some respects, as far as the system goes, this is not abnormal.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Because my husband just finished reading a book about Calvin Coolidge that the kids will go, he loves history. You know, birthday or Christmas is coming
Calvin
up.
Calvin Coolidge,
so he's got this really eclectic set of books that he's read based on somebody going, oh, a book on John Brown. You'd love that, right? And he's like, oh, my gosh, all these pages. So he got this giant one on Calvin Coolidge, and he read it. He reads the whole thing. And he was talking about this budget crisis. And he's like, you know what's interesting? This has been going on since the 1920s or right after World War I.
Mm-hmm.
They were completely out of money because of World War I. And so Coolidge works and works and works and gets things in. And he goes, and actually the way he actually balanced the budget and got us out of debt by lowering taxes.
Way to go, Calvin.
Said, who knew? Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, silent Cal. Thank you. But the thing that would drive him insane was that the minute more money was coming in, although the debts weren't paid off, the senators would all grab it and go, oh, great. I want to do this with it. And he had continual problems going, no, that money's earmarked already. And they're like, no, we're just going to do this. And he said, you can't spend it. So it's the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so he spent a lot of his time vetoing things because he was trying to keep people from getting used to leaning on the government for a lot of things that we do lean on them for today, that he said, you know, you let the government in here and they're going to take way more than this one little bit. We can help people in a different way, you know, than than having a government law passed about it. And so that was kind of interesting also, because that's part of what's led to our current crisis, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You look at all those, it's like history, does it repeat itself or echo itself? Or, you know, it's that thing of, look, are we learning anything from these past lessons? Do we even remember them?
Mm-hmm.
And Lincoln's the same way. Look what these people were fighting about.
Yeah, yeah.
They shouldn't have been fighting about that at all.
Right. Yep, true.
It should have been a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. And from the founding of our country, they knew it was going to be a problem, but they could only get so much passed and get Virginia to go along with stuff. That was a continual problem. You know, so they were like, well, how about we'll put the capital near you? How about we'll do this? And then the South would fall in line behind Virginia. That's been a problem since the beginning of our country. Which I hadn't realized that way back then, everybody's like, well, we need to just write the slaves out of here. I mean, you know, like no slavery and then they're never going to go along with it. Okay, well, we'll do it like this. So there was this big plan that was being put into effect before the Civil War broke out of based on the laws and the way they were handling things with the South, they were gradually going to phase it out so that slavery wouldn't be profitable. Mm-hmm. Then they wouldn't want to keep slaves. And by not letting them import new slaves, that would make it to where eventually everybody would be freed. It was a longer, slower process, but it was one that would leave us without a civil war,
yeah,
hopefully. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, then that didn't work and you had to go the hard way.
Right, right.
Or it wasn't allowed to work. It wasn't allowed to have time to work. So,
yeah.
Because of the expansion in the West, where the slaves states wanted to add more slave states.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
yeah.
It's fascinating stuff. It's just amazing how it's all come together. And I'm as amazed as ever that the country survived that whole time, the 1860s.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
I just can't believe that we're still the United States after that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. That was, I mean, think of the monumental effort that was put forth.
Mm-hmm.
And by no one more than Lincoln.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's the one who, when he got the word that the truce was signed, that Lee had signed the truce, that he sat down on the White House porch and asked the band to play a song. He goes, a song I haven't been able to hear for 4 years. And he asked them to play Dixie. And I was like, you know, he would have been, if he'd have been allowed to live,
mm-hmm,
hadn't been assassinated, Reconstruction would have been so different.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. And I mean, that speaks to the whole view of history, you know, history as a string of very specific people that have,
true,
influenced everything. And,
true.
I mean, what if Lincoln wasn't there, period? You, mm-hmm, know, what would have happened right then?
Mm-hmm.
It's just astounding, you know. I mean, here we are, you know, in 2013, and, you know, history has unfolded the way it has unfolded. So it's, mm-hmm, it's hard to say, but the fact that, you know, these very specific people have influenced history in, you know, Lincoln, nobody as big as Lincoln, you know,
right,
in the United States anyway. And it's just incredible to think about, you know, if that person hadn't been there, what would have happened,
well,
how important he was.
Yeah. And really, when you look at life, I think that speaks to the value of each person, too.
I think it does, too.
Yeah. Individualism in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And each of us in our own sphere of influence has that potential if we're trying to be the person that we can be, the best person that we can be.
Mm-hmm.
That's the influence we have on our work and our families and, you know, our friends and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're all influencing, you know, not unlike Lincoln. It's just that our circle is smaller, right?
Yeah,
you know,
and we
so,
have to work with rivals and,
exactly,
and people like,
yeah,
that to try to get things done a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it frustrates me to think, you know, if you go the other way, you know, the positive way is down, you know, to the individual, but it frustrates when you look at history as, you know, government versus government, you know, and wars and things, and how sometimes petty things turn into a war, you know. You know, mm-hmm, I can get an argument with my wife or something like that, and, you know, a million people aren't going to pass away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I laugh, but it's tragic, you know, where you've got, you know, world leaders who may not like each other for some reason and are willing to, you know, take an army to war. You know, I think of the Middle East as an example, and I realize it's way, mm-hmm, more complicated than I'm making it,
right,
sound. But the thing is, you know, if you have two leaders who like each other, somehow they've made a connection of some type. You know, I'm thinking maybe of Reagan and Gorbachev or something, mm-hmm, like that, where, you know, I remember, you know, reading about Pope John Paul II and
oh,
Reagan and how all that tied in together and how, you know, somehow there was a rapport there that,
right,
that suddenly blossomed into further things. You know, the opposite can happen too when the rapport is not there and there's a dislike. For example, President Obama and Vladimir Putin. I mean, they seem to really hate each other and it's affecting the world. I mean,
yeah,
and, you know, it just seems like it just is.
Well, and you look at it and you go, and because I was thinking of things like Stalin or Hitler.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even mm-hmm. how World War One started. And the thing is that there are certain events that will precipitate things. But doesn't it come down to usually, are we thinking of ourselves and what we want, or are we thinking of other people?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that we're trying to love our neighbor as ourselves and thinking about the other person instead of looking inward?
Yeah,
I would contend that the people who are having a hard time, and it's not always both people, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think anybody's going to have a hard time getting along with this guy. I don't care who you are.
I think so, too. Yeah, and I'm not trying to put any American president in there.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put Obama down in that way. I'm just saying
No.
You know, because that person is in there, you know, he's not going to get along with anybody. I remember the first time Putin met President Obama, there was a news story, you know, and you never know.
Right.
I never know what's true, but Obama wasn't interested in, you know, having vodka with this guy. And it damaged the relationship, which is Putin's fault, not Obama's fault. I'm just saying.
But on the other hand, it's a Russian thing, okay? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. What are the customs of the country? Just sit down and have the damn vodka. I'm just saying.
Sit down and have it, yeah.
Yeah.
Obama had a tough time with foreign countries there at the very beginning. It was like, you know, he was very inexperienced and had a lot of bumps in the road that I remember. But,
I'm just saying it's that, and it's the thing again of, are you going to extend yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody in that position, as we saw in this movie, let's say, has to. Mm-hmm. I mean, look how far it went in this movie before Lincoln finally sat down in front of his cabinet. And did he say, I am, by God, the president of this country,
and I said
this needs to happen, and do it. And,
yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he jollied them along for a long time and tried to get it. And he finally said, I am the most powerful man in the world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't you guys do this? Get going. Because he didn't do that very much. He was trying to do something with people's cooperation.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so stuff. I think
But you're right. You know, it goes all the way up to the country level and all the way down. You know, if at a country's level we could love God and love each other, and at the personal level if we could love God and love each other, things would be a lot better, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, and even for people who don't love God or don't care about God, if we treated each other the way the humanist movement, let's say, would say we should, then it would be heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why Catholics at least know that, well, of course, it can't be heaven on earth.
Yeah.
We're all so flawed. You know, but what we can do is always keep getting back up and always keep trying. And for those of us, and especially us Catholics here on this podcast, you ask God for help.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the times you can't do it yourself. You need that extra little bit of grace and help. And sometimes that helps you be determined enough to push through and go, I'm not going to make that remark. I'm just going to be quiet. Or I am going to do this thing that I really dread doing. Or, you know, whatever. It helps you push through and be bigger than yourself. And that helps everybody around you, too.
Yeah. And I feel that way as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a great movie. And I love the personal moments in it. And I think the only thing I have a problem with this movie in is that it went on too long. We all knew where this movie was going. We knew he was going to be assassinated. We knew, you know, all these things.
Would you have ended it before the assassination?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because I felt like you knew that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't need it.
Right. It's true.
You just kept going. Yeah. And then you're just like, you know.
Yeah.
You may not have felt that way.
No, it did seem as if they were providing something that the audience really kind of wanted to see there. I read Ebert's review, and Ebert said, you know, it could have ended when he walked away after that was passed.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had just walked off, you know, we knew what was going to happen, and that would have been a good ending. Yeah,
they could have even just put up one of those I can't remember what they're called, but like a still thing with, you know, and he was assassinated 3 months later or whatever it was.
Yeah.
you know, he wasn't there to continue the work, but good for him for getting this done.
Yeah, because the book or the movie was not about the assassination or anything.
No.
So.
And we all knew Mary Todd Lincoln was going to be, pardon the expression, crazy. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, everybody was devastated. Everybody around the world was devastated.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it just left a mess. And his vice president was like the worst possible person to have running things. And I will say also I gave Tom mm-hmm. in the history theme a book about President Grant that actually Orson Scott Card had recommended. Huh. And I thought it was supposed to be a fairly short book, turns out not. And but I think I misinterpreted what Card said, which was that it helped him understand Grant's presidency in a way that no one did, because we always think of him as the failed alcoholic, weak president, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And this book actually talks about his whole life, but it does talk about the presidency specifically. And I also, after, you know, the great thing about these books is Tom then tells me the good parts. I don't have to read them.
Very handy.
Yeah, it is wonderful to have my own person to sift through that stuff. But basically what you discover is he was trying to carry on the stuff that Lincoln had kind of talked to him about, and how kind Lincoln was to him. Mm-hmm. He would know that Grant was very uncomfortable with public speaking. But after he was a war hero, everybody wanted him to speak. And while the war was still going on, and so they'd both be going to speak somewhere, and Lincoln would write to him ahead and say, "Oh, by the way, I'd like you to know I'm going to write my remarks down. So if you want to write your remarks down, that's fine too, because I'll be reading mine."
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that he'd be doing to help make things easier for Grant.
I see.
Mm-hmm. He was just so kind and considerate that way. That's and nice, understood yeah. personalities, you know.
Yeah, my view of Grant, you know, without any kind of a depth, was always that he was almost the opposite of Lincoln. In that he couldn't handle his cabinet at all. And basically they ran it. And, you know, kind of ran over him. Is that accurate or?
Kind of, yeah, because he made the mistake of trusting people too much.
Mm-hmm.
When they'd say they were doing something, he was like, "Okay, good." And, you know, then what?
Hmm.
But he was elected. They were continually coming after him for re-election, and he was continually turning them down because he's like, "I can't do any more than some other person would do in this spot." He was just trying to save things from the way it was under Johnson,
uh-huh.
who was in between them, because he was the vice president, who was awful. He was a Southern Democrat, and he facilitated terrible things. Or no, was he a Southern Democrat? No, he couldn't have been.
He was
the kind who wanted vengeance against, because what a lot of people wanted after they were so mad about the Civil War, that what they wanted was vengeance on the South. And Lincoln had always said, "No, these are our brothers. They made the wrong choice, but we are going to be they're coming right back in just the way they were." Mm-hmm. Of course, he died, and that wasn't carried out.
Right, right.
And so then Grant was trying to fix a lot of that stuff, but he, you know, trusted the wrong people and a lot of things.
Wow.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Grant being an alcoholic, that's one of the funny things Lincoln said, was somebody was like, "Oh, he's doing a lot of drinking." And he's like, "Really? Well, tell me what kind of whiskey he drinks, because I would like to send a case of it to all my other generals."
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Fascinating, yeah. Fascinating. So,
yeah.
So Steven Spielberg did a great job, in my opinion.
I thought so. I haven't seen most of his later movies, which tend to be more serious and
uh-huh.
about things that would distress me a lot to see visualized.
Like, yeah.
You know, World War II.
Schindler's List is one that, it's like, I've seen that movie one time, and I don't know that I'll ever watch it again. It was really amazing. Really affecting,
uh-huh.
but it hurts. It hurts to watch.
Yeah.
It.
Just watching the trailer left me with some images that I can't get out of my brain. And I'm like, I know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in all of that awful stuff. I believe that these people were noble or expedient or whatever. I trust the story. I can't watch it. Mm-hmm. Like that, that's, did he do Saving Private Ryan or was this somebody else?
Saving Private Ryan, yeah.
Same thing there. I'm like, I believe it. Mm-hmm. I can't watch it.
I thought that was a terrific movie.
I heard it was great.
If I had to pick a time period that I was most interested in, World War II is just endlessly fascinating to me. But Saving Private Ryan, I really liked that movie.
Yeah,
he's made a lot of great movies. do you have a favorite movie of his?
Well, you know, you asked, and the movie that came to mind immediately was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Ah, okay, yes.
His lighthearted adventure period. I was looking through his filmography after that, and I was like, "Oh, I'd forgotten he did Catch Me If You Can."
Yeah, he does seem to have kind of two modes, doesn't he? He has this Lincoln, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan mode, and then he's got the Minority Report, Jurassic Park, Indiana Jones mode.
I love both
halves of him. I mean, I think are great.
Yeah.
There's some things I haven't seen. I haven't watched Munich.
No. Yeah.
Have you seen War of the Worlds
with
Tom Cruise? I enjoyed it.
Oh, did you?
I did very much, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I can enjoy movies that are very different from the source material.
Oh, yeah. And it's huge. Yeah. There's nothing. I mean,
and I didn't watch it because of that. I was like,
there's almost nothing in common. This. Yeah. It's like they got together and said, hey, let's do War of the Worlds. And then they just made it up. But yeah, well,
I was surprised. That's why I was surprised, because I didn't remember him doing Catch Me If You Can, unless I misread it.
And I have not seen that one, but that's one I need to see.
He's produced a lot of movies, too.
Yeah, I'm looking at his list here. He did direct Catch Me If You Can.
Okay, and that was kind of interesting because it was a smaller feeling movie, even though it had Leonardo DiCaprio and I think, and some other people in it. And it kind of went all over the, you know, it had a big scope for this guy's activities, but it had the feel of a smaller movie. Mm. It was well done. It was really well done. I liked it a lot.
I'd like to watch it.
Yeah. It was really, yeah, actually, I know there was more to it than this, but what I really recall is the poignancy of the effect of not having a father.
Mm.
And I saw something that said a lot of his movies have those themes, which I'd never thought about.
Not having
a father?
And
I guess they were thinking of E.T. and, you know, which another classic movie.
Yeah.
And Jaws, which I didn't see it when it was popular, so a lot of the effect of Jaws was lost.
One of my favorite father movies has got to be Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, that's very cool. He directed that one as well, and yeah, that's a good show.
Yeah. I didn't care for
Junior.
The movie in the
book. Yeah. Junior, I love it.
I love you more than the last man. I the last man. Yeah, that was a lot of, those were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Definitely good. Definitely good. Yeah. Jurassic Park was terrific. Mm-hmm. That's one of those movies I think is just about near perfect. You know, I could watch that over and over.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that I always call the most expensive B movie ever, and just so great.
Yeah. So, have you seen? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Have you seen Minority Report?
No, and the reason I haven't seen it, Rose and I rented it, and then some time ago, and then it started off, and it had all these pictures of eyes and scissors, and I was like, I can't watch.
No, thank
this.
You.
I was like, no. And then I've been told that actually you don't see anything and nothing really happens. Mm-hmm. And that if you get past that first 5 minutes, I was like, but the first 5 minutes were what scarred me. So, you know, but I've always thought it should be a good movie to see.
Yeah, it was good. And based on a Philip K. Dick story.
Yeah.
As so many things are. But I liked it.
Which reminds me, because that makes me think of Jesse at SFF Audio and just... Apropos of nothing else, we haven't mentioned Tamahome for a long time.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Do we want him to ever listen to a podcast? I hate to say it's all about him, but evidently that's what I've heard.
Tamahome the Great.
Indeed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
For sure. If he was in charge in 1865, things would have been a lot different.
Yeah, although so quiet, but he would have written a lot of things out for
everybody. That's right, exactly.
So, now, did you say if you had a favorite Spielberg movie?
Well, I like I said, I think he's got the two modes, so I'd have to pick two. And one of them is Saving Private Ryan. I really, really liked that one. And then of his other mode, I would say my favorite Indiana Jones is The Last Crusade.
That is a great one.
Yeah, so I think I would pick that one. I really enjoy that movie.
Forgot that one. I like both of them so much.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
First and third. He had that second movie problem, I thought.
Yeah, yeah, he did. The Temple of Doom. I'm not sure what happened there. That's funny. Yeah, I hear they might be making a fifth. Oh, it's here. It's,
really?
It's on his IMDb list. It says Indiana Jones 5, but then it says delayed.
Yeah.
Which means that that's, maybe.
That's, I think, well, lucky.
You always just hope that they've got a story. But that last Indiana Jones, although I don't think he directed that one. I don't see it here. He did direct it. It says there.
I
thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great.
That's what I heard, so I just didn't see it. I didn't need to see another Indiana Jones movie just to see an okay movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not that into the series.
But there are several of his movies that I need to still watch. I didn't.
What are those?
Things like War Horse. Munich. The Terminal was a very good movie, I thought.
Oh, The Terminal was interesting because that was Tom Hanks, right?
Yeah, right.
It's funny because that's another one that's kind of like Catch Me As You Can, although I found it less satisfying.
Uh-huh.
It's another small feeling movie, you know?
He did those
back
to back.
But I felt it didn't really have a point. It went along. It was interesting to watch him. Tom Hanks was his usual wonderful person. But I just felt like it didn't do anything. I mean, everything doesn't have to have a huge point, but it kind of just went along. It felt like a small indie movie where the person's just getting going or something. I don't know, to me.
Gotcha.
I'm not necessarily right.
Yeah, one of my least favorite movies of his has got to be AI, which
I haven't seen that, but I've heard it's...
It's just incredibly depressing.
Oh, then no.
I think, what was the director's name who did The Shining? Kubrick.
I think that
Kubrick-esque. Yeah, and I think that it's actually, he was doing a Kubrick,
homage.
Like Kubrick was going to do it, and then he did it, and they did it almost as Kubrick, and it's as depressing and dismal as Kubrick would have done it.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's not very fun.
And he did, I know people are going to laugh when I go, and he did that movie about Pike's Peak, right? That had Richard Dreyfuss.
Close Encounters.
Right,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
It's like I could see the spaceship, I could see everything, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I never cared for that movie, but
yeah,
I'm really
yeah.
not a Richard Dreyfuss fan, so that made it more difficult.
I loved Jaws. I really did.
Okay, yeah.
I really did.
I should rewatch that.
I think that's a good movie.
I watched it at a point where I knew most of the stuff about it, and it was, you know, coming around, it like re-released in theaters kind of thing. And I kind of went, And now I think I could watch it with more appreciation for what's actually going on. And I love, who's the guy who played the sheriff of the town?
Roy Scheider.
I love Roy Scheider.
Yeah, yeah, me too.
He's so great. All That Jazz is one of my favorite movies.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I read so much about that in terms of how much they did without having a budget for, you know, big dinosaurs or anything.
Yeah, that was his first major film, I think.
Moment.
Yeah, and I remember reading, you know, they were trusting him quite a bit, and he was making these decisions on set, and the crew was like, I don't know that that's going to work. That's funny. I'm looking at that on IMDb, and it says the budget for that movie was $8 million.
Oh, my.
And it made $260 million.
Yeah. And then he could write his own check.
Pretty
after
much
that.
After that, he was in business. Yeah.
Well, I have an interesting piece of trivia for you about Jaws, which is that it premiered at a shopping center that's very near where I live. Like, I could walk there in 5 minutes, literally. And ever after that, he considered that to be his lucky theater, and he premiered a lot of his big movies there.
Oh, how cool.
And very sadly, that theater then, of course, much later went downhill, became a Dollar Theater, and now it's been torn out, and it's a Kohl's.
Oh, no.
But I think of it sometimes when I drive by. I'm like, this is where Steven Spielberg felt like it was lucky to open a movie.
My gosh, that's cool.
Yeah, I know.
You think that he'd have saved that? He said, you know, here's some money. Well, build that thing.
I guess he didn't care anymore. Yeah,
maybe he just...
George Lucas were busy sitting around in press conferences or seminars or whatever, being depressing about the future of movies.
Yeah, that was interesting, wasn't it? I don't remember that whole thing, but they were saying that they felt like it was headed to where we'd get nothing but giant blockbuster movies, and Lincoln was almost made as an HBO movie because that's the only place now that things could be made. And I don't know that that's a terrible thing, you know, as far as... You know, if it were to go that way, I mean, TV, you know, we've talked about it before, you know, TV has become really good. I mean, there's a lot of really good things going on there. And if Lincoln had been on TV, maybe it'd have been 4 hours long.
Right.
And maybe that would have been neat, you know?
Right. A smaller venue is not necessarily bad, making it for the smaller screen. Like, we still haven't seen this, but that series on John Adams.
Yes.
It's supposed to be fantastic.
Yeah, I need to watch it as well. I have not seen it. But
yeah. Now, what did that make me think of? Oh, well, the interesting thing about that is you hear this, everybody's like, oh, doom and gloom. But Ron Howard was on, might have been The Business. KCRW is The Business. It may have been The Treatment. I get those mixed up. I mean, one is talking about the work of art, or, you know, the movie, and the other is always talking about the business of the movie. But Ron Howard may have been on both of them when Rush came out. Was that the name of his race car movie? Yeah. And so they asked him about that. And he also has directed many big blockbusters. And he said, well, they have. I see why they said it. And he said, but look at how I got Rush made. I couldn't get this huge movie made, so I went away and got money from other places that fund smaller movies. And I just made a smaller movie instead, and I liked it. It allowed me to investigate something I'd never done, which was race cars. You had to go off and get all these different people who were used to filming that kind of thing. And he goes, it was really a great project. And I understand it's a pretty good movie. I don't think it did that great because... You know, we talked about it, race cars. I don't care if Thor's in it or not. It's too busy being racing cars. Don't care.
Oh, that's funny.
But but the movie itself was supposed to be really good. So it was a smaller movie, but maybe that was a better place for him to spend his time at that point.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, that's kind of a more upbeat view. He's like, oh, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying here's how I did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know, I don't fully understand the ins and outs of how all this happens, but, you know, it seems like every movie is its own business. You know, you've got to have investors, and then you hire a whole bunch of people, you make this movie, you finish it up, and then you sell it, you know, or you try and get people to come buy tickets, and then that's your return on investment.
Right.
So if I've got that right, you know, it seems like that really quality is going to win, you know. You can have, I guess that what Spielberg and Lucas are saying is that the people that are investing want huge returns on their money, and the only way to get huge returns on your money is to do Thor.
Yeah.
Right? And, so,
right.
But I think that there would always, you know, I'd like to think that if I had, you know, $100 million, that I would contact Joss Whedon and start doing Firefly. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, I mean... It's just
it's
like
been a decade.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, I think that there would be interest. You'd think that people that would be satisfied with, you know, 10 or 15% return would be able to finance some of these things, or would want to.
Well, and I think also you'd find somebody like Joss Whedon wouldn't agree. I mean, he did Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog to show that you could have something popular start from the internet. He did, which I still need to see, the Shakespeare, was it As You Like It?
Yeah, yeah.
At his house over, what, a couple of weeks, just because they wanted to do it, just to do it. And it's been very good, evidently.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are all kinds of ways. But, you know, if you're locked into this big Hollywood way of thinking, which is kind of what... Unfortunately, I don't think that's what Spielberg and Lucas were thinking, but that's how I looked at what they said. I was like, oh, you guys haven't had to think outside the box for a while, have you?
Yeah, yeah. Because there are a lot of movies getting made. I watched a movie, not that, you know, my daughter broke her leg, and we've been watching a hell of a lot of movies. So one of the things we watched was a movie called The Way, Way Back.
Oh, that's on my list, that Jim Rash and the other guy is.
It was very, very good. Very, very good. But I can't imagine that was a big budget in any way.
No.
You know, things are getting made.
Oh, yeah, because, oh, gosh, is it is it Stephen Sondheim? Soderbergh.
Uh-huh.
Soderbergh. Who I love his direction. I love his style. Unfortunately, he often doesn't do movies that I'm like, I can watch this. But he did a long talk before Lucas and Spielberg's thing where he was just kind of talking to some group of film people about all this stuff. And he was pointing out that there are more indie movies being made now than ever. It's just, can they get distribution? And that takes me back to our January movie, which can't get distribution.
Oh,
obviously.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
But it's to help solve that, they're streaming it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going very through these small theaters. Like they had 3 days in Dallas at the Texas Theater where Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested. We were sitting there going, why do they have this stuff on the screen about this is what they're showing on November 22nd? I'm like, oh, wait a minute. And then they're having a talk and then they're showing JFK. Wait, oh my gosh. And Tom's looking it up. And I'm like, we're sitting two rows in front of where Lee Harvey Oswald was when he was hiding out at the theater before he was arrested.
Holy cow. Yeah.
Yeah. That was crazy. Anyway, but it's a independent documentary that is so well done and so professional looking. I couldn't have believed that this is the first time this guy directed a movie.
Oh, that's cool. I cannot wait to see it. And the name of it is?
Muscle Shoals.
There it is.
The
cool.
Movie. And if you're a music lover like my husband who read every album in the fine print, you know Muscle Shoals.
Oh, cool.
And if you don't, you've heard it maybe mentioned if you've heard the song Sweet Home Alabama, where we never understood the words, but we understand what they mean now.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm looking forward to seeing that. So we're going to do that in January. Right?
Yeah.
Great.
We'll have one episode in January because you're traveling, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's what's going on with the podcast, everybody, is I'm traveling most of December. So I'll be back in January, and then we'll start putting together a schedule at that time. But we're definitely going to do that movie in January.
Uh-huh.
And we're talking about, is it okay to say that we're going to talk about Lord of the Rings?
It is.
We're going to talk about Lord of the Rings in February. We haven't decided exactly what that's going to look like because we are pretty darn sure that 1 hour is just not going to do it. So, which is great. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well.
So we'll figure out what to do. I don't think we'll post something that's like 2 or 3 hours long, but maybe, you know, in 3 episodes or something like
that. Yeah, I was going to say we could break it up if we had to.
Yeah, but we'll figure out how to do
that. Yeah, so start reading now. I told Sarah Reinhardt, who's been a longtime listener, and she was like, Lord of the Rings, Sarah, it's finally coming up in February. She says, oh, yay. Start reading.
Happy joy, right. But before all that, we've got one more book to do. And
yeah,
it's a remotely connected to Abraham Lincoln.
No, or Spielberg. Crazy.
Right, exactly. So we're going to talk about Unholy Night, right?
Yes, in a couple of weeks. And that will launch us into, that's our Christmas book.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't sound like it is.
It's by Seth Graham Smith. I've got it in my hand here from the library. Who also wrote Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
There's our segue.
Yes, exactly. Because so I'm looking forward to this. This will be kind of cool. So, I mean, in a nutshell, this is like a retelling of the wise men and all that?
It's a retelling of the three wise men and of the Holy Family's flight to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
If the three wise men were actually three bandits on the lam from King Herod disguised as wise men who
I love it.
Get so outraged by this baby slaughter that they're like, oh, that's it. We are helping you go to Egypt.
That reminds me of Life of Brian when the wise men show up at the wrong place. They show up at Brian's instead of Jesus.
Right. Someday we're
then they come back and they get their stuff.
I love that movie.
They take their gifts away.
Yeah. No, bring them back.
Oh, these gifts are for next door. They're not for you.
Yeah. That movie is practically perfect except for the ending.
Yeah, yeah. It's
great. I would say. Just the problem. It's usually the comic problem, right?
Uh-huh.
How do you get out of it?
How do you get out of it? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So Unholy Night, and I can highly recommend the audiobook, which is how I first experienced it because the library had it.
Oh,
so
great.
I listened to that.
Good.
And I haven't read it in print, actually.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, I've got the print version right here, and I've also got the audio, so
You're doubled up.
I'm doubled up, yep.
Yeah, so in a couple weeks, we'll do that. Then in January, we're getting ready to rock out, everyone.
That's right. And I'm excited. That's going to be fun. That'll be really fun.
Yeah, it's I have to say, for anybody who hasn't heard me raving about it or seen my review where I'm like, oh, everybody must see this, just to kind of reassure you a little, it is much more than just a straight music documentary, and it is surprisingly complex and layered. I was astounded. And it's surprisingly appropriate for the kind of discussion that we have.
Mm-hmm. Great. Fantastic.
Yeah. And the soundtrack, you just will have to get ready, make sure there's room to dance. Because people were dancing in their seats, essentially, while we watched this thing.
Very cool.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Well, great. All right. Well, then we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yes. See everyone in a couple of weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.